Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and if she hadn't got sick at the last minute, she would be saying, I'm Christine Williams, but she did, and you're listening to Fiber Talk. And this week's guest is Jen Lucas from Jen Lucas Designs. Jen, welcome.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thanks for doing this, and you win. You get to listen to a non-knitter, talk to a non-knitter for an hour.
Oh, great. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, Christine's been burning candles at three ends, so.
Yeah,
you finally got to her, which is too bad, and it was too late to cancel, and so we're just gonna have some fun. I'll learn things
all right.
for you. How will that be?
That all right, sounds great.
So Jen, it turns out Jen lives just up the road from me, about 20 miles, northwest of Chicago, and, you're a knitter and a knitting designer.
Yes.
And Jen Lucas Designs and then Knitting Like Crazy are your two websites.
Yes, they are.
Yep. All right, so we have to start out the show because we have to talk about what you're working on at the moment. So you tell what you're working on.
Okay. Well, currently I've been knitting on a shawl pattern. It's a new design that I'm working on. And so that's been the main thing I've been working on the last few days. This year I've been trying to release more patterns. So that's been my focus. And so this week I've just been knitting on my shawl as my main project. So that's what I've been working on.
All right. Do you get to do knitting just for fun or anymore? Is it just working on designs?
It's mostly just working on designs. I get a little bit of what I call, personal knitting or personal crochet in every now and then. But the vast majority of the knitting that I do now is for work and for my designs. So, yeah.
Well, not a bad thing.
No, not a bad thing.
Yeah, and I'm working on, Jen, you haven't been along here in the last few weeks, but I've been going through kind of a, obsession with getting the canvas, the needlepoint canvas square on the stretcher bars. So, I ruined a couple canvases because I didn't have it quite the way I liked, even though people said don't worry about it. So I'm past that, and I'm still working on Gay Ann Rogers' Lady Edith, which is from the Downton Abbey, her geometric. It's very attractive, all done with silks and creams. And
Wow, that sounds cool. I'm just very new into needlepoint and cross stitch. I like just do the basics, but that sounds super cool.
Well, we did not have that on the list that you stitched too. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I just recently, like in the last year, have started sort of dabbling in it, definitely not designing my own things, sort of following other people's patterns. So yeah, that's awesome.
Well, you won't be the first knitter who, picks it up and then ends up designing. So
yeah, that's true.
We'll look for that.
Okay.
So, all right, so let's just start from the beginning. How did you become a knitter? A kid watching grandma or pick it up later?
No, it's kind of funny now thinking about how it all started. It was maybe about now, like 13, 14 years ago. I had been out of college for a little bit, and my friends and I don't know, we just were really, this sounds so crazy, but we were really into watching reruns of The Golden Girls. And in the show, the character Sophia crochets, and we had no idea the difference between knitting and crochet. We were just like watching Golden Girls reruns all the time, and we just got in our head that we need to be doing this yarn craft like Sophia from The Golden Girls, which just like, it sounds stupid because it is kind of stupid. So my friends, for my birthday that year, they bought me a booklet that you would just get at a big box craft store called Learn to Knit in Just One Day and some needles and some yarn. And, that's what they got me for my birthday so I could be like Sophia from the Golden Girls, which like I said at the time, we didn't know that it was actually crochet. So I guess I just could have easily have gotten into crochet had we just like bought that stuff. I taught myself out of a booklet. My mom does not knit. She is not crafty at all. I don't have any, my grandmas aren't knitters or anything like that. I literally just taught myself out of a booklet and just completely fell in love with it. And so I knit for a few years. You know, I was always kind of doing my own thing. Because I taught myself how to knit, like, I didn't know that there was such a thing as a yarn store, or I didn't even, like, think, like, oh, people would follow a pattern. You know, like, I was just kind of doing my own thing from the beginning. So when I sort of took that dive into designing, it was kind of like a natural progression. And since, you know, I was kind of on my own, doing my own thing from the start.
Okay, so how, learn how to knit in one day. Now, I explained a couple weeks ago that my friend Connie Bell kind of gave me a 2-hour rundown about what goes on with knitting and how to knit in one day. I'm not seeing that happen from my perspective. How did it go for you?
Yeah, I always joke that it was a lie. It took me longer than a day. I feel like I got the knit stitch down pretty quickly, still longer than a day, but you know, that I did get down. It was the purl stitch that, I mean, I think it took me weeks to figure it out. And it was, I mean, YouTube probably was around, or at least videos, you know, online, but that wasn't prevalent like it is now, you know, and like I said, I didn't know anybody. So yeah, I just kind of struggled with it until I figured it out. And yeah.
So you literally, when you say self-taught, you literally had to figure this thing out with the help of that book then.
Yeah, it was, and it was like illustrations in the book, you know, it wasn't like photos of somebody's hands even, it was just like those illustrations, which I sometimes can find confusing. So yeah, I did struggle at the beginning, but I don't know, I have no idea why, like, for some reason I just was gonna stick, maybe because I wanted to be like Sophia from the Golden Girls, I guess, but you know, I stuck with it, and then, like, once I figured it out, I, like, literally have never looked back. I just have not stopped knitting since, and you know, since then I've picked up the crochet and things like that too. But yeah, it's so funny because yeah, it took me longer than a day. The booklet lied. It was a good booklet, but it did lie. It took me longer than a day.
So, okay. So this is, you know, we talked to so many people, and you know, everybody finds a different way that they get hooked and addicted to this. And it's interesting to me. So you picked this up. So what was your first project? A standard blanket or something?
I knit a scarf as my first project, which now I always tell people is a terrible first project because it's just 6 feet of knitting and you get bored, but you know, I didn't. So, so my first project and the first several projects I made were just scarves, and, eventually, you know, once I figured out, you know, things like how to read a pattern and things like that, I moved up and did like a lot of hats or baby blankets too. And then I got really into knitting socks actually after, like, that was after I'd been knitting for a little bit though.
Okay. I have to ask about socks, but so then I'm going to guess that either the first or second Christmas, if you do the Christmas thing, you had gifts of knitted things for everyone.
Oh yeah, there was like that after that, like first year, that first Christmas or the second Christmas after I'd been knitting, like everybody got a scarf. They all got scarves, and it was not really, it was not high quality yarn. It all, you know, came from the big box stores. But yeah, everybody got a scarf because that was like what I knew how to knit. And yep. So that's what everybody got.
So are you one of these that has the knitting everywhere? It's sitting wherever you're sitting, you have your knitting bag with you?
Yeah, pretty much it's always with me. You know, a lot of times if I'm going somewhere in the car, even with my husband, I'll have it, you know. So, yeah, it's pretty much taken over the house, the car, et cetera.
That's all right. That's all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's one of the neat things about knitting is it really is fairly easy to do that. You can, you know, a couple needles in a bag to hold the ball of yarn, and you can pretty much go anywhere you want, and you don't have your arms flailing all over when you're doing it. So, and it doesn't make any noise.
Exactly.
And I get a sense as I watch different people knit that there are certain things that you can do. You don't even have to look at what you're doing. It's pretty much by feel and rhythm, huh?
Yeah, that's definitely true. When I'm, you know, especially if I'm traveling, I don't necessarily design a lot of sock patterns anymore, but if I'm traveling, I will be knitting a pair of like just plain socks because that's something where I could just be walking through the airport and still knitting if I wanted to. Yeah, it's just very much the feel of it. And I do, I always tell people that, you know, when people say, oh, I don't think I have, you know, the patience to knit, I'm like, but, you know, sometimes you have to, like, wait in line somewhere, and then you could just have your knitting. Like, you do have time, you know. You could take it everywhere.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Well, Christine was saying last week about how these needle things, but particularly knitting, it occupies that part of your mind and really allows you to concentrate. If you're in a meeting or something, allows you to concentrate more on the meeting because that part of your mind that wants to go do something else has something to keep it occupied.
Yeah, and, definitely, yeah. For sure. Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I find that with stitching, but it's not as easy to just take stitching wherever you want to go because you usually need a light and a magnifier and different things, so it's not as portable. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's fun. So that you can just do that, drive your husband nuts, or is he just used to it by now?
I mean, he's so used to it at this point, and especially now that, you know, my business, you know, this is my full-time job now. He's basically just accepted that I'm knitting everywhere I go and that there's yarn everywhere all the time.
Yeah. Well, one of the blogs that I follow, I don't know if you know Stephanie Pearl McPhee. She goes the Yarn Harlot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I follow her because she's just a hoot. And, she told the story here a couple weeks ago about, she was all packed up to go on a yarn knitting retreat trip and she had to go to a meeting and she doesn't go anywhere without knitting something. And she got to the meeting place and had forgotten her knitting because it was all packed in her suitcase. So she literally went to a yarn store down the street and bought some yarn and needles so she'd have some knitting to do in the meeting because she couldn't bear the thought of sitting in a meeting and not having knitting. that's really in your genes then.
Yeah, that's so true. My husband and I, we went on a like 2-week road trip last fall. And, you know, I mean, of course I like pack so much yarn, but the first couple days in the trip, I guess my husband must have been just driving more or something. Like I just like, I knit like 3 pairs of socks or something in just like a couple of days. And I like actually started to get panicked. Like, I don't think I have enough yarn. Like, I mean, it ended up being fine. And of course we found a yarn store along the way, either way, you know, to stop at. But yeah, it's like, yes, you always have to be prepared and you have to have your yarn wherever you go.
This is smelling like drug addiction to me here.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Yarn's getting low. I'm going into a panic. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Okay. So, all right. So you start out with this, with knitting scarves for the family. I can just see you showing up with gift wrap, the you know, wrapping paper. It's all soft and it's all kind of juggling it in.
Yep.
Everybody's name on one. Everybody knows what they're getting. Yep. Yeah, the gardener brings the tomatoes in the fall and Jen brings scarves in Christmas. Okay.
Yep, that's exactly right.
So how, at what point do you start saying, wait a minute, I can do my own designs? There must have been, I mean, obviously scarves and then you branch out into shawls and hats and so on and so forth. But where is it that you start saying, wait a minute, I think I can do my own design? Or is it first, wait a minute, I want to try different yarns and get a sense of what they do? What's the transition that gets you to designing?
Well, I think for me it was that, I'd done all the scarves and then I got into the shawls. And after that, I feel like I was always making slight changes to patterns. I mean, you know, not like to the point where I could call it my own pattern, but, you know, just making small changes. And so actually what had happened was that Stephanie Jappel, who she worked for Craftsy for a long time, but before Craftsy, she actually on her website was offering a design your own shawl class. And I was, you know, following her blog. I had made some of her patterns. I was like, ooh, that sounds cool. And so I signed up and I took it. It was really to teach you how to design sort of a top-down triangle shawl, just a traditional shawl. And I took that class, and this is right when Ravelry, you know, was starting to become like a thing. You know, it was in its infancy. And, so I took the class, and I was like, I love this. I love the idea of creating my own shawls. And then from there, I just sort of figured out what I had to do to get my patterns out there and up on Ravelry. So, yeah, it was just that I found this random online class, and it was great. And it's actually recently I was talking about it on social media, and it turns out that a lot of designers that I'm in contact with now and are designing now, that a lot of them actually took that same class. And so
oh.
It's really cool that we all kind of got our start that way.
The gateway class, okay.
Yeah, that was, yep. And even when I'm going around teaching, no matter, like, even if it's, you know, sort of in Illinois or, you know, even I went to California last year, all the time, it's funny because I'll have even students in my class that are like, how'd you get your start? And I'm like, oh, I took this online class. And they're all like, oh, we took that class too. So that's kind of fun.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I listen, one of my favorite podcasts is Abby Glassenberg's While She Naps.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she's terrific. And I, one of them, the first exposure I had to Craftsy was through one of her guests, who I think was the organizer or whatever, a prominent person in the Craftsy effort. So talk about what's that like to do a Craftsy class? Is that obviously it was successful for you, but maybe others just simply don't know about it.
About taking a class through Craftsy?
Yeah. What's that like?
Yeah. So when I took the Design Your Own Shawl class, that was before Craftsy, but since then I have taken, like, I sign up for Craftsy classes all the time. So so Craftsy is super great. So what it is when you buy the class, you get a series of videos, and it depends on which class you sign up for. Usually it's like something like 8 to 10 videos, and it will take you step by step through whatever technique you're trying to learn. And then there's also PDFs that go along with it. So there might be a pattern, or there might be worksheets for you to fill out. And then there's also on the website sort of like a discussion area where you can, you know, ask your questions, you can post your project photos. And when they first started out, it was really, I think, concentrated on a lot of knitting and crochet. But now, I mean, I literally took a, like, grow your own garden class on there. You can find, they do have some needlepoint classes. There's baking and, like, cake decorating stuff on there. And so, yeah, it's great. And also, once you buy it, the class never expires. So you can go back 3 years later if you want to, you know, and take it again, or maybe you bought it when they had a sale and you didn't get to it. So once you purchase it, you have access to it on the Craftsy website for forever. So there's constantly new students sort of coming in and, you know, taking these classes. So it's super cool. And I've taken a lot, you know, like I said, like I just buy them because I like to sit and watch them even like when I'm knitting on other stuff. Like I just enjoy, you know, like learning different techniques or whatever, even if I don't always go full out through the class. But I took a class, Gwen Bortner had one on Craftsy called How to Teach It, I think it's called. And I took that class when I was just getting into teaching knitting classes, and I found that, like, extremely helpful. It helped me so much in my business. So they have everything on there now that's craft-related. It's really great.
Well, that's a good investment if you keep. See, I didn't realize that you could have access for forever to the videos, because that's really great. Like you said, if you get a sale and you buy three or four, and if you don't get to them, at least you know that you're not throwing your money away.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I mean, I take it to understand as long as Craftsy's a website, you have access, you know, to your classes. So it's really great. And they do really high quality, you know, the videos are really high quality. You can even pause the videos and, like, add your own little note, you know, for yourself, like, nobody else will see it, but, you know, if there's, like, some certain technique that, you know, or a tricky part of a technique that you're learning, you can pause the video and make a note. So, if you go back a year later when you were like, what's that thing? It was in my Craftsy class. You can find it, you know, very easily. So they really have, like, a very good platform. And so, yeah, I definitely recommend it. I think Craftsy's great.
Yeah, when I was listening to Abby's podcast, I got the distinct impression that there was a really strong effort to make the instruction quality very high. Like the videos, they really wanted everything to be top flight so that you weren't fumbling around. And I mean, that was the impression I got, and it sounds like they're successful with that.
Yeah, I have a couple of my friends that are in the, you know, that are knitwear designers, and they do some other sort of yarn crafts and stuff, and they've actually gone as instructors to Craftsy to film classes, and even on their end, they said that the experience has been really good. So I think both for, you know, the teachers going to teach the classes, and also, you know, me, like, as a student, I think on both sides of it, Craftsy is doing a very good job.
Yeah, well, that's good to know. Yeah, that's, yeah, yeah, I'll have to check that out. Even, yeah, maybe I'll learn some needlepoint things. I mean,
yeah.
We can always learn something, you know?
That's right.
Yeah. So, okay, so what's your first, what's the first thing you designed that you sold?
The first thing that I designed that I sold, I'm pretty sure, is my shawl. It's called the Moore shawl, and it's actually the shawl that I designed in that Design Your Own Shawl class that I took. So it took me a while from the, when I had designed it in the class to sort of get it ready and figure out what I had to do to get it up on the internet, but that was, I mean, that was one of the very first ones. I also, I still actually have this pattern up on Ravelry, but it's free now. I also, one of my very first patterns was an iPod Nano Cozy. Like, who even has one of those anymore? But I leave, every once in a while, somebody still downloads it and makes one, so I just leave it up there, but it's free. But, yeah, so I would say those were probably my first two.
iPod Nano Cozy. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Ever.
That must have been a quick little project to do.
Basically knit a rectangle, seam up the sides. I mean, yeah, that's pretty much why it was free.
Yeah. Yeah. Zero effort on your end. Zero
right.
effort on theirs. Yep. So you get, you get this design thing going, and you just kept designing and putting them up, and you just seemed to have designs that hit people just right, I gather.
Yeah, it just really, you know, it sort of started off slow. I always tell people when they're interested in getting into designing, you know, we all started out, you know, making little to no money on Ravelry, every designer. But yeah, I just kept pushing through and just, you know, started just designing more and more, occasionally, you know, working with a yarn company or something. But I think the turning point for me was really when I decided that I wanted to try to have a knitting book. And this, I mean, I always say, tell people, I wrote my knitting book like no one really knew who I was. I was not like a popular designer at all on Ravelry. But I feel like for me, that's really where my turning point was, because the book really did help people, you know, sort of see what my style was, and that, you know, then that sent them to Ravelry looking for more patterns.
And this book, you self-publish it, or did you connect with a publisher?
All of my books are published with Martingale and Company, so they, they're, you know, like a traditional craft book publisher. They do a lot of quilting books and then knitting and crochet. Well, it's like quilting slash sewing, but like mostly quilting. And so I submitted the proposal to them for my first book. And so, yeah, so I've just used a regular publisher. I do self-publish some ebooks, but those are ebooks. I don't like go through the whole like turning them into physical books or anything like that. But my actual physical books are with a regular publisher.
So yeah, and book publishing can be quite an ordeal. Long time and lots of checking and deadlines. Did you have a good editor to help you through it all?
Yeah, so Martingale, they've always provide the tech editors. So over the years, I've had a few different ones. It's just sort of whoever I think they have that's free, that, you know, that they're working with at the time. But I've been fortunate that all of the editors I've worked with through Martingale have been really great. So, yeah, but it does take a long time. I have another book coming out in May, and it's like, yeah, I turned it in last year in, like, May or June, you know?
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
And now it's finally coming out. So, yeah, it's a lot of work in between. The work does not end when you turn everything in, you know? It's still a lot of editing and things like that have to happen.
Yeah. And then people I've known who have done books through conventional publishers, if they've had success, it's because they've been the ones that have been going out promoting and hawking the book. Did you have to do a lot of that to get it on the map, so to speak, or was Ravelry a big part of that and helped you?
I think I think Ravelry has really helped me because my first book came out in 2013. So by that point, Ravelry was, you know, very established as a website. And so I think just being able to simply put pictures, you know, put the pictures and the information about each pattern on Ravelry, I think that's really, you know, helping designers like me now who have traditional books. But it was a lot of, you know, trying to do social media and, you know, contacting yarn stores to send my shawls there for trunk shows and things like that. I'm fortunate that, you know, Martingale does have a good team. So, you know, I've never really had a problem. Like all the time when I go to the yarn store or Barnes and Noble, I pretty easily can find my books. So, you know, that's been great. But yeah, I mean, that's true. It is, you know, the authors have to be willing to put the work in to, I think, for your book to be successful.
Yeah, well, that's everybody that I've ever dealt with or talked to. That's exactly what it's been in one form or another.
Yeah.
That book comes out, you have to be visible. And of course, social media really helps anymore. You know, the days before social media, that was even tougher because you had to literally go out and on the road. So, a lot of trips to classes and clubs hauling boxes of books?
You know, I don't really. The only time, like, I teach, like, a fair amount locally, you know, in sort of northern Illinois. And so in those cases, like, yes, when I'm going to guilds and stuff, yes, it's like hauling my books and saying, please buy one. Most of the time if I'm going to the yarn store or whatever, then they'll already have everything set up. But, yeah, I do think it's a lot easier now, especially because, you know, my books, if people don't want the physical book, they can buy the ebook version of it on Ravelry. They can buy the Kindle version if they want on Amazon. So, you know, they have access to the book in so many ways that people didn't have before.
Right. Oh, we should say what the name of the book is, just in case somebody doesn't have your book and they can buy it.
Oh, yeah. So my first book is Sock Yarn Shawls. And then I followed that one up with, get ready for it, Sock Yarn Shawls 2.
I bet that was a long meeting to come up with that, huh?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then my third book is Sock Yarn Accessories. So that one still had shawls in it, but then had other things too. And then my fourth book that came out last year is called Cozy Stash Busting Knits, and there's no sock yarn in that one at all. But that one's accessories. And then my next book is coming out in May, and that one is called Stunning Stitches. So those are all my books.
All right. So Stunning Stitches, meaning it's simply how to do different stitches as opposed to projects?
This book is still projects. It's So how it's broken down is there are 21 projects in the book, but they're separated into they're separated into 7 sets of 3 patterns each. And so what I did was I took one stitch pattern and then used it in 3 different designs. So I might use it in a poncho and then a shawl and then a scarf or something like that. So that's sort of where they came up with the name Stunning Stitches, because basically I said, you know, some stitch patterns are too pretty just to use one time. So each set will, you know, it like focuses on one stitch pattern, but they're used in different ways. You know, it's not just like, oh, change the stitch count, now your cowl is wider or something like that. You know, it's actually 3 different patterns that incorporate the same stitch pattern. Yeah.
Now, whenever I've purchased a needlepoint book of some kind, the advice I've gotten is go to Office Max or Kinko's or whatever, have them chop off the spine and put a spiral binding on it so you can open it and lay it flat. So
yep.
How are your books produced? Are they bound and then someone has to do that, or do they spiral bind, or how do you do that?
Yeah, my books are bound, so if you want the spiral, yeah, you have to take it to Office Max or Staples, which I always take one copy of my books after I get them and spiral, you know, get them spiral bound, because I like having them that way when, you know, when people have questions and things like that.
Sure.
It's a lot easier to just flip through the books that way. So, yeah, but mine are bound, so unfortunately you do have to take them to Staples if you want the spiral put in there.
Yeah. I'm just curious, because that always hurts me, to think about taking a beautiful new book and just chop the spine off, you know.
I know. The first time I took my book, I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, I can't believe, I'm like, I hope they know what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Of course they did, but I was just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. Your brand new proud first book and you're chopping.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So, okay. So I have to ask, I mean, I've never published a book. I'm a magazine editor, so. You know, magazines come out every month and I'm used to that. But to put together a book that's a year plus of effort, not to mention all the work that goes into it before you even approach somebody to publish it, gotta be a huge thrill to see that thing show up.
Oh yes, every single time. I always feel like sometimes, you know, after you're working on the book and you finally turn everything in and you've knit all these things and written all the patterns, you know, you're kind of like, oh, just so happy to be done, even though you still have all the editing and stuff to do. And, you know, it is a lot of work. It takes a lot of focus to do a book. But I don't know. Every time it happens to me, it's like, oh, I don't know. Maybe I'm going to take a little break from writing the books. You know, it's so much work. And then the book comes and I hold it in my hand and I'm like, oh, I just want to do this all over again. This is so great. It's yep. Like you seriously forget how much work you put into it. And you're just like, I'll do another one.
Well, it's just, I mean, that's something to be really proud of, especially now that you've done several of them, to think that you can put together, especially someone who started knitting based on a TV show to take it all the way to the point where you're publishing books that people want to buy because they like your designs.
I mean, know.
I mean, I just got to feel good. That's fantastic.
Yeah. All the time. I'm like, I just can't believe, you know, it's like, seems so crazy. And when I bought that booklet, when my friends gave me the booklet, I never thought like, oh, eventually, you know, I'll quit my full-time job and, you know, be able to do this and write books and go around and teach and sell my patterns online and whatever. Like, I just feel so lucky. Like, a lot of people would like love to turn their hobby into their job. So I just feel like so grateful that I actually got to do that, you know?
Right. Yeah. Because, you were doing wastewater treatment testing or something?
Yeah. Yep. Sure was. So I was, working for one of the counties in the area and I worked there. Well, I had worked a couple of lab jobs before that, but my most recent job that I left before I went to do this full time, I was working for a county testing wastewater, primarily. So part of my job was going to the waste treatment plants to collect samples. And then the bulk of my job though was working in the lab, then testing the wastewater, some drinking water too, but it was mostly wastewater.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And so you're doing that during the day and then at night you're designing knitting patterns and at what point do you start to think, wait a minute, I can make a go of this thing?
Yeah, so pretty much how it happened was it was before really my first book came out. I mean, writing a knitting book, you're never like that alone is not enough to quit a full-time job for the vast majority of people. But probably for anybody, I thought, you know, with the books and stuff, I thought, you know, maybe that will help the other aspects of my business. And I can sort of, when you add it all up, sort of kind of, you know, like get there in terms of full-time income. So really, I mean, my husband and I just talked it over and, we made the decision that I was going to give it a go, but it was like 2 years or something from the time when we decided, you know, okay, your next job will be your business to when I actually quit. I mean, it took a lot of planning, you know. I mean, you have a stable job. I'm working for, you know, like a municipality. Those are like good jobs to have.
Sure, sure.
So, to walk away from that, we just were like really wanted to plan it out. So,
that's the thing that is interesting to me is, yeah, you have a good job and you have a job that's not going to go away.
Exactly.
You know, as long as you do the job right, you know, it's not going to go away. So that's to say, I'm going to walk away from this because I want to design and teach knitting. That's, I mean, it's a real leap of faith, but it's also, I mean, I suppose you could always say, well, I can always go back to this, but still to give up a job and of that caliber and walk away, some planning, but also there's just kind of a close your eyes and jump type thing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's really true. And, you know, we did try to, you know, I tried to, it was hard because especially the last 6 months, I would say, like, I knew basically the date I was planning on quitting. And so, the last 6 months especially were really hard because I would go to work and work there for 8 or 9 hours and then I'd have to come home and work, you know, at my business because I wanted it. I really didn't want to be in a situation where I finally quit my job and then like my business wasn't, you know, sort of moving along enough, like where I, you know, felt like, you know, oh, I have all this free time. I mean, that's not to say that I didn't slack off those first couple months because I finally felt like, you know, so free. I didn't have to answer to anybody but myself. But, yeah, the last 6 months especially were hard because it was like so many times. It was like I just wanted to be like, can I just be done with this lab job? Like, this is so hard having to work all day and then come home and work. But, you know, we just wanted, you know, make sure, you know, from like a financial standpoint, you know, I was going to be vested in, you know, things like my pension and things like that, you know. So we just tried to play it as smart as we could. But, yeah, at some point it was just like, all right, we're going to just kind of trust that the planning that we've done for this is going to work and that, you know, this business is going to work out. And you can always, I guess, go get another lab job if I have to. But, you know, and I just quit. And, you know, now it's been almost 3 years and I don't really see myself going to work in a lab again anytime soon. Yeah. I would, if I had to, I would. But I, you know, this is working right now and I'm happy it is because it's funny because the testing, the wastewater, I know this sounds weird, but it really was something I was very interested in. I was passionate about, like, you know, I wanted it sort of an environmental type lab job. So like when I was in college and so, you know, I was so happy that I had it, but it's just over time, you know, it's sort of like, well, sort of what you get passionate about sometimes changes a little bit. And so, you know, I just sort of worked on this until I could make it my job. So.
Yeah, but that that stretch in there where you're basically working two careers, that's that really got to test your stamina and test your determination because you know, a job like that, you can't just slack off. You know, you can't go you can't kind of slip through the day so you can get home and get to work on the knitting stuff. You got to be on top of your game all the time. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it was definitely hard, but you know, in the end, I'm glad that we did it like that, you know, and that like my husband and I planned it out that way that I could, you know, like that we waited so long for me to quit my job just because I feel like when I did quit, then, you know, we just felt like everything was like a little bit more, you know, just stable, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, I was going from getting a paycheck every other week, you know, at my full-time job to, you know, you make money when, you know, you get a pattern in a magazine or your royalties check shows up or somebody buys a pattern online or somebody books you to teach, you know, that it just became a little bit more, you know, unstable. You have good months and bad months. So, you know, it's just, you know, the paycheck every 2 weeks, you know, stops. So,
Yeah, you got to adjust to that. So talk about with your designs, do you knit first and then write the pattern or do you do the pattern and then knit it and see if it works out? How do you approach things?
Almost always I knit or I'll design the pattern first and then I'll knit it and then sometimes I might change it. But especially when it comes to the books, I will always write the patterns first and then knit. When it's my designs I sell online, it kind of can go either way. Sometimes I design a little bit more on the fly when it's just going to go up on Ravelry. I would say the majority of the time I'm writing the pattern first or at least writing enough notes to like basically say, this is my plan. This is what I'm going to do. I'll make the charts and everything beforehand.
Oh, okay. All right. And, do you find yourself, do you try to do complex patterns, simple patterns, a mix?
I would say I have a mix of patterns. I would say most of my patterns sort of fall to, you know, someone that's, you know, venturing out of adventurous beginner and, you know, stepping up to intermediate, you know, somewhere in there. Most of my patterns, my shawls are probably most of them a little bit more intermediate level. I can really only think of a couple things that I've done that really, truly, I think you needed to be a little bit more advanced to do. I sort of like that intermediate range because I feel like most beginners, you know, can step up to it, you know, and be okay. So, yeah. I would say most of my patterns are intermediate.
At worst, it's a little bit of a reach for them.
Yeah.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, obviously that's going to be the market. I got to believe once every now and then you just want to go nuts a little bit and see how hard you can, how complex you can make a pattern just for the challenge, for your own personal challenge.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of times where I've been taking like sort of, I guess you could say like the risk lately in terms of making my pattern a little bit harder is I feel like my last couple mystery shawls, I host a mystery shawl knit along usually in the fall, and the last couple, I feel like I've really sort of, they're still not like impossible to make or anything by any stretch, but I feel like with those, I'll try to incorporate something that I haven't done in a pattern before, just because I'm like, well, it's a mystery, you know, it's got to be something exciting. So,
right.
You know, with those, I did one of them, I did, like a half pie shawl, but then a middle section of it is knit sideways instead of continuing to knit it top down. And then my one last year, I did it so there was, like two layers of the shawl. So like there were leaves that came down and then behind it, there was like more knitted fabric. So you had to like pick up stitches and knit behind it. So I feel like sometimes that's where I tend to do my more advanced patterns or with the mystery shawls. But yeah, every once in a while, you got to throw something a little bit tricky in there.
Right. Well, and you have a motivated audience there too. So.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You can do that. Yeah. I've never done we have them in the needlework end of the world too, mystery whatevers, and people will post and I'll watch them, you know, develop, and it looks like fun, but I've only done a couple of things where you had to do every month, and there's a couple others where I've tried them. And the months go by, and I'm not getting it done. So,
oh yeah,
I tend to stay away from those things. But it's fun to watch the mystery things evolve because they're really creative ones. Just when you think you figured out where they're headed, they'll go somewhere else. And
right.
And I need to do it one time just to see what it's like. But it's keeping up is tough on my end. So.
Oh yeah, for sure. Because I've tried to do a cross stitch one before, and I like it was from last year, and I'm still on like March of last year.
There you
so,
go.
Yeah, I'm very behind.
Yeah. No, I have. There's a lady in England, Ilke Cochran, and she's done two monthly stitch alongs of Hardanger, and she's very good at it. And she starts out in January with the very basics, and then, you know, progresses you till the end where you're doing pretty complex stuff. And Hardanger is fun because once you get past cutting your canvas and making holes, you know, the fear of that, it's fun to do. But now last year she did one and I did the first three. And then the next thing I knew, I was getting an email saying, if you haven't downloaded the entire year, they're going to be removed in 2 weeks. And so, oh no, I got to scramble and get all these download, because I wanted to keep them because she does a size that makes for nice ornaments, and they are a nice challenge, especially when I'm traveling. They're a nice thing to do, but I did the first three. I was so proud, and the next thing I knew, it was the end of the year, and I'd done nothing.
Yeah.
So frustrating. So, all right, so teaching. Now, I'm a former teacher, former high school science teacher.
Oh, nice.
So I love teaching. So what's your first teaching experience? How did that come about? Come teach us, Jen.
Yeah, that was kind of how it went. So there was a yarn store in the area. They are no longer in business, unfortunately. So there was a yarn store in the area, and my friend was teaching there. And then they wanted some, you know, different classes. I mean, she was teaching, like, a lot of socks and stuff. And so I started teaching there and doing a few classes here and there. But I had no teaching experience. So it definitely was like a little bit of a learning curve there for me. And really, once that yarn store closed, I sort of changed my focus with the teaching, and I no longer have sort of what I call like a home base yarn store. I more come in for one day for an event and then I'm gone.
Yeah.
So, that's sort of how I've been operating with my teaching since that shop closed. And I actually really like it that way. It's like really fun, you know, that I get to go to all these different places or get to go to different, you know, guilds and stuff and just meet all kinds of different people from all over. So I really enjoy doing it that way. But I'll be honest, my first few times I was teaching, I would get really nervous because I'm very, like, I'm introverted, and so, you know, I was working in a lab, so it's not like I had a job where I had to, like, normally get up in front of people and talk that often. So, you know, at the beginning, I would get really, you know, nervous about, even like the day before, I'd start getting nervous about going to teach. But after a while, you know, you sort of get into your groove, and now I've gone, and, you know, especially last year, I taught quite a bit, and so now it's just sort of like, just like a fun day. I just love it. And I just love like talking to everybody and seeing what they're making and seeing what they're into. And now it's great. But yeah, at the beginning it was definitely a little nerve wracking.
Yeah. Intimidating thing. Yes.
Yeah.
So still learn every class you teach, learn something from somebody.
Oh yeah. Every time. I mean, it's so crazy because yeah, it's like everybody knits a little different, or somebody would be like, you know, somebody in the class occasionally will solve somebody else's problem, and it's something I've never thought of before. So yeah, I love it for that reason too, because I feel like, you know, I've gotten so many tips. Or like my knitting group, we sort of stole how we were doing our gift exchange at the holidays from a guild. Well, it wasn't actually from a guild. I was teaching at a convention, and somebody in my class like just randomly said about how their guild does their gift exchange at Christmas. And then, you know, I took that back to my own knitting group. So yeah, I learned all kinds of things when I'm teaching.
Yeah, no, that's to me, that's the fun of teaching is
yeah.
It's a two-way street. Most people don't think it is, but it's a two-way street, and you can prepare and you can know things six ways to Sunday, and then there's always someone with that one question that stops and makes you think. And I've always been convinced the fastest way to learn subject matter is to try and teach it.
Yep, that is very true. I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, yeah. So what's your schedule like this year? Well, we're already in early March here. You got a bunch of them lined up for the year?
You know, it's weird. This year, I'm not really sure what happened. My teaching schedule is pretty open right now. But I am teaching at YarnCon in Chicago in a few weeks. It's April 1st and 2nd. So I will be there teaching a few classes both Saturday and Sunday. So right now, that's the only thing on the schedule. But sometimes, you know, like as the year goes on, then I'll schedule a few things. So I've also been teaching to like a lot of the knitting guilds and stuff locally. You know, so I think I need to be branching out a little bit more. I do go out like out of state and teach sometimes, but I've been teaching a lot around in the area lately. So you know, I think that's a little bit why my schedule's been a little more open this year, because I've already taught everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, people. Jen's available.
Yes,
sign
that's
her
right.
Up.
Yep.
Sign her up. Call now.
Yep, that's right. JenLucasDesigns.com. Just send me an email.
That's right. Yep. So what kinds of things do you teach when you teach? You different levels, like mainly beginner stuff? Or are you, I mean, if you're teaching guilds, you're going to have experienced people. So is it chart-based? I mean, this is just a dumb guy question. You know, is it technique? What are the kinds of things that people like to learn?
So I typically teach more intermediate level classes. That's not to say a beginner couldn't take my class, because they could. And in all of my classes, I always have been including the written instructions for the charts, because I find even sometimes you get intermediate knitters or sometimes even advanced knitters that can do all these different kinds of cool techniques, but they don't read charts. So all of my classes always come with the written instructions for the charts. But the main classes I teach, or my most popular ones, are design your own sock yarn shawl. So it's obviously slightly based on my book, Sock Yarn Shawls.
Yeah, and, I picked up on that. See, I'm a quick study like that, yeah.
Yeah, right. And so people come in with their, you know, their yarn that they want to knit a whole shawl with. Obviously, you can't knit a whole shawl in a class, but we'll go over how to get started, and I provide stitch patterns for people to sort of plug in to their shawl. But then if I do have more advanced people in the class, I also, you know, help them to create their own charts if they want to knit a shawl with their own chart. So that's probably my most popular class is the designing the sock yarn shawl class. And then the other one I teach a lot, it's called Lovely Lace Borders, and it's a 3-hour class on adding a border to your shawl. Well, you could add the border to anything, but the, you know, since I knit shawls mostly, you know, focuses on adding a border to your shawl, but you can certainly add it to anything you want. So those are my two most popular classes. But I occasionally teach other things. I teach a class on, I call it like switch a stitch or something. I can't remember the exact title of the class now, but it's, sort of like taking a very close look at your knitting and, sort of seeing how like subtle changes in what lace stitches you're using will change like the overall look of your piece. I teach one now on different shawl shapes. So beyond just like a triangle shawl, like how to, you know, do different shawl shapes or how to incorporate, you know, two shawl shapes together in order to make a, you know, a whole new shape. So, yeah, most of my classes are centered around lace and, shawl knitting.
Yeah. All right, people, sign her up. Let's go. She's got she got an open schedule. Put her to work here.
She's open right now, guys.
Okay, I got to do a left turn on you here.
Okay, that's okay.
Crock pot recipes. Now you.
Oh yes. Oh, because I said in my like bio on my website. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So okay. Talk. All right. What's that all about?
Well, I just like looking up crock pot recipes online and then just trying them in my crock pot because. I mean, I do love to cook. I do, really. But, you know, crock pot cooking is so easy. So, I don't know. Sometimes I just find myself late at night on Pinterest looking for crock pot recipes to try. So, yeah, that's what I like to cook.
Okay.
So,
all right.
I ate one tonight.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, especially if you're doing what you do during the day, I mean, to set something up in the morning and let her just simmer all day long is, So
it's pretty easy. Although I'm always joking with my husband now, though, that it's a lot harder now that I work at home because about 2 hours into the cooking process, it starts to smell good in the house because I work at home and then I'm like, now I'm just hungry until the food's ready. So I guess that's the disadvantage.
Yeah, there is that drawback. Yeah. And just. Slip down and sample a little of the goods there, yes.
Right, exactly.
Okay, well, there we go. So do we have your favorite crock pot recipes on? And I think we all need to try and say crock pot recipes 5 times fast.
I know.
Yeah, because I couldn't pull it off. Do we have favorite recipes on the website somewhere?
You know what? I don't. I should probably...
Have you done a book? Have you considered doing a book?
I should do a book on crockpot recipes. I have so many, but actually if you go to my Pinterest, which I'm Jen Lucas Designs on Pinterest, I have a board and it is called What a Crock, and those are all the crockpot recipes I've saved. I've probably tried most of them.
Okay, there we go. There we go. Become a crockpot recipe freak with Jen's recipes. I think we have
it. There you
go. Yeah. That Pinterest is interesting. Now I have a Pinterest account and I collect, some needlepoint stuff, but I'm not very active at it. But every now and then, boy, that's like, to me, it's like looking in the dictionary to see how to spell a word or the definition of a word. And a half hour later, you've read, you know, 1,000 other words because you just got interested. And,
yep.
And Pinterest is dangerous.
Yes, it is. When I worked in the lab, I had, this sort of like, it was just what I did at lunchtime. We would pretty much eat in our cubicles. Our cubicles were actually outside of the lab. So it wasn't like I was eating in the lab because, you know, that would be like a huge rule. You know, you would never break that rule and eat in the lab. But So I'd be sitting in my cube eating my lunch every day. And that's when I would have my Pinterest time because I felt like I had a half hour for lunch and then that would just like limit me to just spending only that time on Pinterest because like, yeah, you can fall down that rabbit hole and then it's like hours later and you're like, what happened to my life? You know?
Oh, no kidding. So, yeah. Cause it isn't just the things you're interested in. It becomes the things that other people are interested in. And what's that all about? And
exactly.
Yeah. It's a geometric explosion of stuff and it's endless.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, yeah, and I don't have it like so much now. I don't really like fall down the rabbit hole, on Pinterest like I used to, but yeah, every once in a while it's like, oh, I think I want to like find out about this thing, and then you go on Pinterest, or I want to do some craft, and then yeah, like you wasted an hour and you're like, why? Yep. I had work to do or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But it is really helpful. Like I'll find for needlework, charts, I do mostly charted stuff, not painted canvas. It's fun to go and see how others have done it and see what colors they've used to get ideas.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It really is a quick way to learn. And I'm sure that is with knitting things. You can see what colors people have used, or I got to believe there's over-dyed or hand-dyed yarns of all kinds. And so you can see what people have done with a pattern that might make it different or unique. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's
and I also like Pinterest too when I'm working on my books. Well, I usually will create this as like, you know, a secret board, so only I'm the only one looking at it. But sometimes when I'm working on my books and stuff and I'm trying to decide on sort of the colors of the yarn I want to use, or even what yarn in general, I will use Pinterest for that too, just to kind of get like different color ideas and things like that. It's so useful because it's everything's already on there, you know, you can just find it so fast.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It is very, very effective device. Yep.
Mm,
all right.
Yeah.
We're running out of time. And so we have to do the Abby Glassenberg recommendations. That's where I stole it, is from Abby Glassenberg.
Oh, okay.
Cause I think it's one of the great ideas she has in her podcast. So we asked you to have a couple of recommendations for people, and you said you had them and you wrote them down so you wouldn't forget them. So this is a good thing.
Okay, yes. Okay, so let's see. I would say, you know, because I'm primarily a knitter, my recommendation is the current shawl that I am knitting. I am using yarn from this company. She's called Woolly Wonka Fibers, which I think is like the cutest name. So I would encourage everybody to go check her out, because I am using her Nemu, I think that's how you say it, Nemu sock yarn, and it's merino wool, and it is silk. I think it's 50-50, and it is one of the nicest yarns I have ever used, ever. So I would say go check her out online, and I think I bought the yarn at a yarn shop, so you can find it in yarn stores too.
And what?
And then
give the name of that again. The name of the yarn company.
It's Woolly Wonka Fibers.
Okay, all right.
Like Willy Wonka, but Woolly Wonka. I know, yeah. It's a mouthful.
Yeah, where are they based? Do you know?
She's located in New Mexico, and actually, the woman Anne who runs it, I didn't even know that she had this company. Like, I didn't know that she was the person behind Woolly Wonka Fibers. I actually had been sending her a lot of my finished pieces to photograph the patterns for my packs on Ravelry, and then I bought the yarn and I looked it up, and I'm like, wait, this is the same person. I had no idea that she was also dyeing yarn. So yeah.
So she takes the yarn, and she's the dye. She does the dyeing then.
Yes, she dyes the yarn. Yep.
Okay. All right.
And then I guess my other one actually kind of turns out to be a little bit related to the podcast, because I did not know that you were into needlework. But I have been getting into cross stitch, and really the only patterns I have done, but I love, are the Frosted Pumpkin Stitchery ones, and they have little stitch-alongs and things like that, and I think that they are super great, and they're very easy, because I'm very much a beginner, and you can buy the kits and everything from their website if you want to.
Now, this is new for me. Frosted Pumpkin?
Yeah, it's Frosted Pumpkin Stitchery. Let me see if there's a the in
okay.
It's okay. Their website is thefrostedpumpkinstitchery.com.
Okay. Okay. I have to check that out. I'd not heard of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Their stuff is so cute. And, yeah, they do all different kinds of stitch alongs through the year. Like I did, like a little Christmas sampler thing last year. It was like adorable. So they have lots of cute stuff on their website. I wish I had time to make it all. Like I would make every single thing on their website if I had time.
Yeah, be careful. Be careful. You think you have a knitting stash.
I know. I know that it has been hard because yes, there's so much yarn in the house. I got to be careful with the needlepoint and stuff, because I'm like, that's like another thing.
Yeah. Just fair warning. Yeah. It can get ugly. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So, okay. So, what's next for your business? Where's the next step? More patterns?
More patterns. So this year, I'm trying to focus on putting a few more patterns out on Ravelry. Last year, I was a little bit slower with, I didn't put as many patterns out on Ravelry last year. I think because like my teaching schedule was busier and also, I had some books kind of come out very close together in time. So this year I have my book coming out in May, but I'm also focusing on putting some, new patterns out on Ravelry. So, you can look me up on Ravelry and you can find a whole bunch of patterns there to download.
Okay. All right. Well, Jen, this has been fun, and I got by without my knitting partner to help me out.
Yes, great.
Oh, Christine, I missed you. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Jen. And let's see, Jen Lucas Designs, and of course the page for the podcast will have links to all of Jen's websites and Pinterest and all those things, so you can find her and learn from her. And of course, she's on Ravelry and get her patterns on Ravelry. And yeah, it's endless. And yep. For crying out loud, people, get her to come teach a class.
Yeah.
Let's go.
That's
Let's
right.
Go. All right, Jen. Thanks a lot. And you've been listening to Fiber Talk, and Christine and I will be back next week.